Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. Today we're pleased to have Pat Lynn Kyle, and we're going to be discussing her book, Heal Your Mind, Rewire Your Brain, Applying the Exciting New Science of Brain Synchronicity for Creativity, Peace, and Presence. I probably mangled that one. But anyway, it makes for a good laugh. Anyway, Pat, thank you very so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And
I'm trying
to heal my my brain right now and settle down out of frantic beta, which you discuss in your book, and go more into alpha so we can have a pleasant interview. Anyway, so thanks for being with us. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? I understand you're a therapist, and then you kind of became an expert in meditation, which is how you got a lot of the mind states that you put in here, direct experience with the mind states.
Yes, I've been doing a consulting as well, and I guess the whole idea of the brain started something like 38 years ago when I was a college professor, and I had just gone through a divorce, and probably was not rushing around.
Right.
And I found myself on the couch watching afternoon television, and there was a television show called Meditation for the Middle Class. I have no idea why I watched it, but I'm so happy I did. And the woman on the television screen had a group of people sitting in a circle, and she led them through a kind of like a visualization. And so me, sitting on the couch, I as well went through the process. And after she completed it, I felt an incredible feeling of well-being, and I got obviously very stimulated by going to see her when she came to our city a few weeks later. And from that, we organized a group and started the process of trying to figure out what this mind training meditation was all about. And that was 38 years ago. And in the process, I've done lots of retreats and eventually began to realize on a very long retreat one time that people generally are not going to do this. People can't interrupt their lives like I've been able to do and be in that still place. So how could I bring this place that I found, which I call home base, that I think everyone has, I know they do, how could I bring this to the general population? And then an EEG machine kind of fell into my lap, and I began to see brain waves and see how they functioned when people are in that rushing around state, as you called it, and when they're in that quiet state, and what a difference it is. And I thought, this is the tool that can really teach me and be able to use as an educational tool for others.
Would you like to just go through some of the brain states that exist so our listening audience has an idea of what the different brain states are? I think you have four or five in your book that you talk about.
Yeah, I do. I talk about the brain states and the content that's in them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is certainly not my design. It was designed by a man named Maxwell Cade, a brilliant man from England in the 1970s, who said some similar things like, okay, here I am in this ordinary consciousness where you and I are talking on the phone and people are in their lives doing ordinary things,
mm-hmm.
having lunch or breakfast where I am. And what is it like when you're in a place of very quietness where I experience? Well, there are two different states, and I didn't understand how you could get in them.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the same question and built this machine, which I now have, to be able to see the brain waves. This was extraordinary in the 70s when this wasn't happening. And then he began to take his machine to people that have experienced these altered states, like rishis and lamas and different people, mm-hmm. in different Asian countries and Indian countries, and began to get a model or a standard for what it's like to be in that rush around state and what it's like when the mind begins to settle and have that feeling of home base.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've used his model as a way to build on and understand the states. And I see, what I see is four states, a pretty distinct states that we all have. And one is called theta. And that's when I see it on my machine, it's a very fast frequency. And it's where we make decisions and have conceptual thoughts. And it's past and present, so we're thinking, we're finding memories to give us information about the what happens now in the present and possibly in the future, have that assumption part of us. So that's the part of the brain, the working brain, that we use all the time. Mm-hmm. Busy little brain.
Right, right.
And then a quiet, right, I call it beneath it, but is a quieter brainwave. Brainwave begins to slow down. And that's alpha. And alpha is calm. Mm-hmm. But it also allows us to have these incredible imaginary, creative thoughts, you know, with colors and feelings and sensations. And it is also our sensations that we actually not only feel in our body, but we hear and we see and touch and taste and so forth. So it has that content in it, but is the state of being from being so busy to beginning to be a little calmer. And I think when you take the first two or three sips of a glass of wine, you start moving into alpha. I mean, if you drink more of that, obviously we deplete it. But and then the next level that I talk about is more subconscious, more underneath your real conscious state, and that's theta, and that's like our dream state. So the content there is the content of that frequency has to do with insight. Ah, got that insight. Where did it come from? I don't know where it came from, but it makes absolute sense. I know that I know. And then it has that very quiet dream state, then that insightful state. It also has emotions. There's a lot of emotional drive there, the fear all the way to joy. And then underneath that is delta. Delta is our sleep state, but it's also the unconscious. And I believe and know that we are in the process of making that unconscious conscious. And when you're in that that state, that quality of mind in the unconscious, when you're conscious of it or aware of it, you're in that place of total being. You just are. And there almost isn't a Patlin Kyle. Mm-hmm. There is just, you just are there. There is a sense that everything is just fine. And that's in each one of us.
And wouldn't it be nice if we could just walk around in that state?
Yeah, it would be. And there are people that are, but they can go from, their mind is so flexible that they can move from state to state consciously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
So, what words of wisdom do you have for people who are unable to do a daily meditation practice? Do we have a way that we can help them quiet their mind without a prolonged meditation, or should they really try to meditate daily?
Well, there's a couple of things there. The first thing is there has to be an intention or a want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that if someone's had the experience and they can, oh, my goodness, there is a nice, quiet place in there, and I felt it can be an addiction.
Mm-hmm. True.
It can be a really good addiction. But if you haven't had the experience, just to get it easily is just to do some belly breathing with your eyes closed, because I find that when you close your eyes, in most people I notice, they move into that quieter state of alpha, the more amplitude in that particular part of the brain, of alpha, so a lot more volume. And just by closing their eyes and maybe just holding their hands in their belly and mm-hmm. and being conscious of the movement and the breath at the same time. So what I have people do is when they wake up in the morning to do that five times, mm-hmm. watch their breath five times and feel the movement of the belly moving. And then do it before they eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's three more times. And then once before they go to sleep. So it's just an interruption of that busyness. And it's, boy, it's just so easy to do. And boy, and I have found that when I'll just do that before I eat,
mm-hmm.
Boy, my body just kind of falls into kind of a quieter, relaxed place. Like, oh, I feel more soft.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat slower, which, of course, is very important. And I believe I digest my food better.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably true. I'm looking at your website now. You have quite a number of videos. Is that right? People can go to your website and see your schedule, I see. And you want to talk a little bit about what's on your website?
Well, on my website, I have a place where you can subscribe. Well, that
mm-hmm.
means that you'll be on the list of on the list that I have. So if I come to your particular area,
mm-hmm.
you will have a way of contacting you if you're interested in coming to whatever I'm doing there. But also, it allows you to go on and get a free download of the first track of the CDs that I've made. I have two CDs
mm-hmm.
that take you through exercises in each one of these brain waves. I think I call them training wheels because I don't know anybody that can do this literally on their own. We have this busy brain that we talked about, which is literally called our default system because it goes on no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And when we sleep, it goes on too. So it's this constant thoughts of past and possible present and emotions and images that go on in our mind. And that's very disturbing, and it will really distract you in so many ways, as we all know. We all know that monkey mind. So by going and just downloading that first track
mm-hmm.
is a body scan of relaxation. And boy, the research is really coming out now about how important this relaxation is, even down to the genes. It actually upgrades reactivates genes and really supporting cancer and aging cortisol. There's just brand new research coming out on this, how important relaxation is. So that's just 20 minutes of that CD. So they get a free download, and then they can see whether they like to order the CD that go and are the companion to the book. Also on my website are events that I'm going to be doing and just interviews that I've had and blogs that I do about the brain.
Yeah, I see. I'm looking at all of the different interviews and TV appearances and everything where you've got it very well organized.
Thank you. I'll tell her.
Yeah, really.
I'll have her listen to
here. And, no, that's very good. I think that the podcasts are, and the CDs are an excellent way for people to, even in their lunch break, kind of hit reset. You know, if you've had a really busy morning and some stress and some, you know, you're feeling yourself get out of balance, you could even do a little bit on your lunch break. And in my patient population, one of the most problematic things for people getting to sleep is the monkey mind or the mind chatter, especially if their day has been stressful, because they keep reviewing things, what they could have done differently, whatever, and worrying about the future. So that's like that's why you don't want to stay in the past or the future, because you can't really get anything done in either place. You have to stay in the present. But essentially, many people's insomnia would be cured with this sort of control of that brain state that that you just talked about.
Really would be. I have found for myself that if I don't at least take 10 minutes, and hopefully I do more, but 10 minutes right before I go to sleep, somehow just by doing the belly breath or doing one of the CDs that I have, like you indicated, that it takes you out of that beta frequency and will start dropping you into the lower one. So you're preparing your mind to go to sleep. I don't think we just jump out of one and pop into the other. There is levels of frequency that we need to move into. And I know that if someone eats a big meal 2 hours before they go to sleep, that's going to be an issue. And if they watch a violent show, there's so many, on television or a movie, that will start, that'll be up in their conscious mind. So it's television, it's the computer will do it too, and food and drink, I understand. If you really drink, really have alcohol really close before you go to sleep, that also will, you may go to sleep, but you may wake up and have a disturbed interruption in the middle of the night.
Yeah, there was a theory back when I was in residency that if you ate, and I don't know whether it's true, but some of the residents were talking about it, if you ate Welsh rarebit before you went to bed, you'd have these really bizarre dreams. I don't know why. You know what Welsh rarebit is? It's a cheese dish.
Yeah,
but it
I was going to say, it seems
cheese.
Creamy to me.
Yeah, it must be something in the cheese. But that's
dairy.
A good example of something very specifically affecting them.
Or it could be if someone was allergic to dairy, too.
Could be, yeah.
And so if they had that upset stomach, if you have a digestive issue, that's one of the things that will wake
true.
You up.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
The importance of sleep is so, you know, the more I read about it and the more I just experience a deep sleep, wow, what a difference. Not only your next day, but in your whole health that you must see people because of that.
Yeah, the data is that if people get less than 7 hours of sleep a night, on average anyway, I mean, some people don't require much sleep, as you know, but the average person, if you get less than 7 hours of sleep or greater than, I think it's greater than 9 hours of sleep, your life expectancy decreases specifically. So there is an optimal range of sleep, and if you're getting too much sleep, that's not good. And I think growth hormone production occurs during sleep. So that's a big problem with fibromyalgia patients is that they never get to a deep enough sleep to do the growth hormone. And they tend to age, you know, quicker and have more, you know, muscle aches and everything.
Muscle aches and pains. But also, I think it's a contributory to a depression as well.
Yeah,
sleep deprivation.
So. Well, and also, if you're really depressed, you tend to sleep a lot. I mean, in many depressed states. So.
And is it a deep sleep?
I don't think so, but I don't have a big depressed population. Most of my patients are secondarily depressed because they have these, you know, Lyme's disease, fibromyalgia. Chronic illnesses, yeah. But I've helped people just, you know, with the visualizations that I'm sure are in your CDs, just quiet the mind for, like you say, 5 minutes before they go to bed, 10 minutes before they go to bed, with, combined with the breathing, and they can often skip the sleeping pill, which I think is better because some of the sleeping pills do interfere with REM sleep.
And we have no idea what it does to the rest of the system.
No, that's true. Well, there are many of them are addictive, evidently. Or at least they seem to be. If you don't take them, then you can't get to sleep at all.
I think sleep is a major issue.
I think it is
too. And people, some of the people that have that I've worked with say that if they wake up, if their sleep is interrupted, they immediately put the CD on. They'll have it on their iPod or on something next to their bed, and they'll put it on and they'll go right back to sleep.
Yeah, that's good. The older population has a sleep deprivation pattern that's interesting. They can get to sleep, but they often wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. because of a surge of norepinephrine. And there's some treatments for that, but I think one of the good ones would be them listening to your your CD and calling
back.
But
what creates the surge?
I'm not exactly sure that I can explain it on air. I could go look it up, but we don't have time for that. But I do know that licorice is effective in treating it.
So it must have something with the adrenals.
It's definitely the adrenals. The adrenals kind of spike out norepinephrine, and of course you wake up because that's the flight or fight hormone.
Yeah.
But it's something that occurs fairly regularly with aging. And if you actually talk to people over 80 or so or 75, they often have that. Sometimes they confuse it with the getting up to go to the bathroom, because as you get older, you get up more times during the night to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But sometimes you wake up and then you go, why am I awake? And they go, well, I guess I'll get up and go to the bathroom. So what are you really dealing with? You might really be dealing with the fact that your bladder didn't wake you up, the norepinephrine did.
But it's really the how do I get back to sleep once I've gotten up?
Yeah, and the whole psychoneuroimmunology connection is that brain states have an effect on hormonal output and endocrine function. I mean, that's just it filters down through the nervous system to the endocrine system. So if your brain state is more conducive to sleep and stays that way, then you'll probably stay asleep.
So my understanding is if you're really in the delta phase of the brain state, that releases serotonin.
Yes.
So if it releases serotonin, that's obviously what helps us sleep. So that is
stay asleep. And stay asleep.
Stay asleep.
Right. I'm not a sleep expert, but I've taken several courses, and I know it's important to cycle through all of the different phases of sleep. If you are on Valium or other GABA inhibitors, you don't get into REM sleep. And some of the sleeping pills actually are in that category. So what it leads to later on is depression, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Depression being possibly a neurotransmitter, or at least associated with a neurotransmitter deficiency.
I think
depression has to do with getting off your spiritual course, because that seems, and not having a life purpose. I think that is a more a higher level of defining depression, and actually works
because
a little better.
Because it's always a sense of meaninglessness and hopelessness.
Right, right.
The comments.
Yeah, we can chemically induce a depression, like I said, by putting somebody on Valium every day, in some people, not in everybody, but and then we can chemically induce it by giving them a yeast infection, a systemic yeast infection. It produces aldehyde, and you just feel miserable, and you wake up feeling horrible, you feel poisoned, and you don't want to kill yourself, you just wish you could die, life's no fun. But that's a very, very different thing than a serotonin deficiency depression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that all of these brain states affect the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and then that affects the endocrine system. And over time, if you have a disbalance, then you will get, maybe hypothalamic-induced problems with a number of endocrine functions like thyroid, adrenal, the different aspects of the endocrine system.
It seems to me what I'm seeing more and more is it's this balance that we're here to be in.
Right.
It's a dynamic duo. If we have the two sides of the autonomic nervous system, for example, and it goes through the body all over the place. So, how do we stay in balance? And if we're too much in the beta brainwaves or too sleepy and sleeping all the time, we're out of balance. And how do we get back into that balanced state?
And I think what you said before is very true. having a brain that is plastic and mobile enough to switch brain states rapidly is really what is mastery of the system. And meditation is actually the way to do that. I went to meditation one day and heard quit your job, and I quit my job and meditated 5 to 7 hours a day for 7 months. So, I did a similar
so you were able to have that time to do that and then be able to shift your life.
Yeah. I was talking with a doctor in Scotland yesterday who had something very interesting to tell me. She said that she's been studying these brain states for a while. She's a psychiatrist. And she said that the majority of people who are extremely clairvoyant have high copper levels in their brain, which is very interesting. And she went on to describe why, but I don't understand it well enough to speak it on the air. But it's so interesting to me that the physical can then affect how we can process and interact with multidimensional reality. The copper levels, if you drop them quickly in someone who's clairvoyant with a bunch of zinc, then what happens is that they go into a kind of a bipolar state, according to her. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so minerals.
Your supplements can, if they have zinc in them, for example, affect your metal balance in your body and even take you out of a clairvoyant state and throw you into something that is less desirable.
Well, I've heard that for zinc, you really have to be very careful not to take it too long. Maybe you have a deficiency in it, but if you just take some and get it back on, you don't continue taking it. And I think that's a lot with the neurotransmitters that I talk in the book, that each particular brain wave seems to have a chemical or a neurotransmitter that helps it across its little synapse. And but I also really want to state that you don't keep taking that. If you're deficient in it, take it and then get off of it.
And it's interesting. We have an intuitive protection mechanism that can help. For example, we have a test called SpectraCell that measures intracellular nutrients, and I was deficient in, I don't remember which one it was, maybe phosphatidylcholine or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my chiropractor gave me a present of a bunch of pistachios, and that's very, very high in that ingredient. But, I could just as well have wanted pistachios. In other words,
mm-hmm.
if you have a
mm-hmm.
desire for a certain food, it may be because you're deficient in something that food will supply to your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where does that come from?
So pay attention.
Nice,
yeah. Well, I think our guidance system has way more knowledge than we do. And so what I would recommend people do is understand that everything you do, medication, supplements, even meditation, everything should be done with guidance rather than just rotely. But if you do wake up in the 3 a.m, wide awake, I do suggest you meditate. That's a great way to go back to sleep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rather than taking a pill or
something.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Because that's what we're also wanting. Mm-hmm. I think
Or go to the refrigerator and eat, which is what some of my patients did and they gained weight.
Yeah. And I think that would be hard to get back to sleep after that, but unless they're just so hungry that that's keeping them
awake.
Exactly,
So, do you want to review some of the neurotransmitters? Because I found that very interesting in your book, that the brain states. What is GABA associated with again?
GABA is associated with theta.
Okay.
So it's the inhibitor. It puts on the brakes. It tells us when we've overdone our emotions.
Uh-huh.
Okay, calm down. Tries to get you calmed down. And if your intention is stronger than that and it stays and stays and stays, this emotional state lasts, then it will become deficient as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of GABA deficiencies in my population.
Uh-huh.
And,
and then are they primarily emotional type people or people that haven't expressed the emotions or overexpress them?
Well, actually, I have a very interesting patient population. My patient population have breast implants infected with mold. And some of these people are very logical, straightforward college professors or, you know, physicians, attorneys, whatever, engineers, and have never been emotional in their life. But when the biotoxin produced by the mold, and it's not really an infection, it's just a contamination.
But is it also an inflammation?
Well, it's sometimes inflammatory, but not always.
Oh.
But when you get in there, you know, sometimes the tissues are inflamed. But even with no history of being over-emotional, the majority of these patients are having panic and anxiety attacks that then goes away when you remove the implant and treat with antifungals. So there's an interesting idea.
So they're toxic.
Well, the biotoxin's a neurotoxin, and if the breast implant's only affected, say, on the left side, only the left eye is affected. We measure visual contrast sensitivity tests, very, very delicate eye test that determines the degree of toxicity of the optic nerve. And it was funny because the guy that developed this test emailed me one day and had no idea you could use it for this. It was really funny. I said, yeah, it works great. Very cheap, too. So we determined which breast implants were infected with mold anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they eventually get bacteria, and that's pretty much pain, you know, which one hurts worse.
Right.
But a lot of women out there have, I wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, so I have a lot of this in it, but a lot of women think that they're, you know, absolutely emotionally a wreck. They're often depressed. Many of them have attempted suicide. Many of them have completed suicide because of infected breast implants.
Wow, this is something that is not really well known.
It isn't, no.
It is not well known. And
no, it isn't.
Thank goodness you're working with people and giving some light on the subject, because this is major.
Well, it's so treatable.
It is.
And so many of these women end up on public assistance, or if they can't get public assistance or social support, end up homeless and living in their cars.
Yeah, because you wouldn't come to say, well, I think my breast implant is infected. I mean, that would be the last thing I would think about.
Well, it's so funny because usually their mother will tell them it's your breast implant.
Maybe somebody has some more insight.
I had so many patients that their mother told them it was their breast implant, and then 5 years later they discovered it really was. You know, but there's a lot of resistance on the part of the patient to you know, give up their breast implant. So they tend to, unless they're intuitive and know it for themselves.
It's a very intimate subject.
Yeah, they tend to
block
that.
You don't want to be told what to do.
That's right. That's
absolutely. Well, that's amazing. So the GABA, I think is probably low in a lot of people. I find that people that haven't, that are so in their head, that haven't been able to get into their body, maybe just saying, be here now, being in that,
right.
Okay, settle right here. I'm in the chair. I can feel my feet on the floor. I'm in my body. I feel the sensations of my body. I think that's a lot what meditation teaches you,
right,
is to get into that present state. And when you're in that present state, it begins to open up to your emotions. And if you're never in that state or consciously in that state, then there's a lot of emotions, a lot of different things that are going on all underneath the surface. And that will really deplete the GABA as well.
So in terms of my patients, I find that Valium around the time of surgery is very helpful to prevent the panic attacks. And I also I also give GABA itself. But
right.
Do you have any other suggestions for a GABA deficiency that's, like, severe? I'm not talking a minor one. I'm talking a pretty severe one. I'm just trying to get them through a surgery.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing mind training.
I don't know that they can. Most of them are Demerol.
Oh, no.
You know, like, around the time of surgery is when we get these exacerbations of this anxiety panic situation that I believe, anyway, is associated with the GABA deficiency.
Well, it also can be totally related to the adrenals, huh?
Oh, they all have adrenal insufficiency. They have their the biotoxin knocks out leptin receptors in the hypothalamus, so they have a subclinical hypothyroidism. They knocked out their adrenals. They drink and pee all the time because they knocked out their ADH. And sometimes they knock it out so bad that I have to give them desmopressin during surgery. And then, of course, a lot of them have problems with sex hormones and go into premature menopause.
Oh,
so it really just knocks out the hypothalamus.
Oh, they do not feel good. Oh,
no.
My gosh.
Yeah. That's why the suicide, I think.
It's suicide stuff. Whenever I experienced, I had chronic fatigue as well and wrote a book called When Sleeping Beauty Wakes Up.
Right. Yeah, I read that about you. And did you find out the cause of your chronic fatigue?
You know, I think my chronic fatigue was, well, I talk about it in the book. The issue was, for me, emotional.
Uh-huh.
And when I began to go layer by layer by layer, and I do this in the book, it's very autobiographical, and it began to subside, and then I met a physician who was able to literally give me oxygen.
Uh-huh.
And the oxygen brought me back. But it was also with this really looking at the emotional. I think it was not only physical, but emotional, and probably had some spiritual implications to it, too. But it was in mental. It was all. It just wasn't one thing. And what I came up also was that many, many women that are professional women have immune issues.
Right.
So, because I had asked myself, how come here I'm a professional woman and I'm, one day I'm asleep totally for days and months on end. And why aren't other women doing this? So I interviewed 40 women just in all phases of professional life, and found that they had some major immune issue. And what I said from that was, isn't that interesting? We're all out here, and that was 15 years ago. Maybe it's a little different now, I don't know. But we're all out here in this man's world trying to compete with a different kind of energy. We come from a different kind of more energy from a female to a male in a lot of ways. And we put ourselves out, so our immune system is defending itself like crazy. And eventually gets tired.
Yeah, that's very true.
So I use the fairy tale as a way of talking about all the issues of chronic fatigue, or allowing oneself to get into that state of depletion.
Okay.
So that might be good for some people that have fibromyalgia, because I had that too. You know, I couldn't get my foot in, you know, couldn't snap my bra. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah. There's a great model for fibromyalgia in silicone breast implants, where they start to leak and with chemical toxicity. There's a peer-reviewed study that the FDA helped to fund that showed that women with ruptured implants have a high degree of fibromyalgia. And I think it's just the system gets overwhelmed
it sounds totally physical. But, you know, first of all, when you have a breast removed, there had to be all kinds of emotions that occurred during that time. How did they deal with them?
Yeah, true. But some of them are just for augment, you know, cosmetics. So they're not going through the emotional.
But it could be that, too. I need that for it's emotional, it's going to make me feel better.
True.
Yeah, I'm dissatisfied with my body, with how I look.
Uh-huh.
And so I think there's that emotional component that if it's not dealt with, it can really stay in the cellular system.
That's the connection we were talking about, the brain.
Yeah, the brain.
Psychoneuroimmunology connection.
It's like a trauma.
It is, yeah, that's true.
So you're working with emotions and certainly the physical.
Well, the biggest emotion with the explant is what am I going to look like? The fear and the anticipation of even perhaps loss of a marriage or loss of a relationship because of changing the physical. And it's a cold, hard fact that some women are simply in relationship because of their physical body being attractive to the man. I mean, Not necessarily.
And what happens when that
all
goes?
Women, but some women, yeah, exactly. So that fear is something that surgeons need to understand. I mean, it's based in reality, so it's not. I mean, if that's their support system, that through a husband or through a significant other that is going to leave them if they don't have breast implants, that's a problem.
And there's more research being done on the gene base too. That with being bathed in that fear all the time, a lot of genes begin to deactivate.
That's true.
Yeah, and without that being done, the cells begin to die. So it's learning to how to manage the emotions, and learning when you have fear and being aware of that, begin to shift it consciously, is, I think, an incredible piece that we all need, men and women.
I spent a fairly significant part of my early meditation training releasing fear. And I did it kind of interesting. I was just guided to do this, but you basically ask God to give you the first fear, you know, whatever, something comes to mind, and you look at it, and then you take it out to its worst conclusion, and then you decide, well, that wouldn't be so bad, and then you just throw away the flashcard, and then you do the second one, and then you keep doing them until no more fears come up. And just like Olympic athletes training in their mind for important events, once you've dealt with all the fears in your mind and come to the conclusion that you'll still be okay, if they enter your mind during the day, you can handle them a lot better.
That's wonderful. I have an exercise in the area chapter of Theta and GABA called Face It, Embrace
mm-hmm.
It, Erase It.
Right. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
That's similar.
It is. And it also really resonates to, I just had the opportunity of being with an abbot, a Buddhist abbot that the Dalai Lama just initiated. And he was saying what they always say is that you really need to replace the unwholesome with the wholesome.
Right.
And that's just shifting over the mind. And now that we know that the brain is plastic, I mean, just within the last 20 years, we
mm-hmm.
just realize, oh my goodness, we're constantly growing, we're constantly changing, we're constantly growing new cells, and connections between these cells are in process. And if we realize that we literally have this plastic part of us that can change, that really can make a difference, because then we can have an intention and put our attention on it, like you did,
mm-hmm.
and change it. So if they go to the book and they find Face It, Embrace It, Erase It, I think that is an incredible, helpful exercise to start moving these emotions, because they are emotions. They move.
Right, right. They do. And I can't tell you how important that is in terms of spiritual growth, because really your spiritual vibrational rate, if there is such a thing, probably is directly connected to how much love versus fear you have in your system over time. I mean, that probably determines it. So replacing...
And health for our bodies, too, isn't it?
Right. Oh, it's absolutely connected to health.
Absolutely connected. When I look at the brain machine, when somebody is in fear, I'll say, okay, what's stressing you now? What's
mm-hmm.
frightening you? What's anxious? And I see the brain configuration. Then I say, now, just for a moment, we appreciate, there's so many things in our lives that we can appreciate. What's the one thing that you so appreciate in your life? And you won't believe the amplitude that just grows immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major shift
right.
in the brain frequency. And so if that's just happening in the brain, imagine what's happening in the body. The
mm-hmm.
body will start to relax. It will release. I'm sure the cortisol won't be moving so quickly in the body. And excuse me. And then they'll be able to get back into that balance, that homeostasis that we are constantly moving toward.
And I think it's important for people to have a premise. Premises are interesting. If you have a premise that everybody's out to get you, like some of the more primitive societies might have, the cannibals. There actually are cannibals on the continent now, not this continent, but in the earth, there's cannibals. That's very interesting to me that they exist. And they're very, very fear-based if you ever watch TV programs on them. But if you have the premise that everything is, the opposite premise, that everything is always in divine order, and you start with that premise, then you build from that and you ask, because you can get answers if you ask. And you just ask, well, if everything's in divine order, why did this happen? And then you can have the answers come to you, either in meditation, dream state, somebody walking up to you and telling you the answer, or getting it through signs and whatever, there's symbols. And so you can actually ask questions of the universe, get answers back, and then build on the premise that everything's always in divine order rather than everybody's always out to get me. That's an example of two different diametrically opposed premises and how they can affect your life. Yeah.
That's really, it's nice to hear every now and then, isn't it? We have this reptilian brain in us. I mean, it's the basis and the base part of our head.
That's everybody out to get us.
Yeah, that is right. Okay, I'm going to take it. But we don't have people rustling in the bushes anymore, at least where I live.
We don't have
that, and so that victim feeling. There's also a part in the book I talk about each person has a style, has a personality style called, and I use the Enneagram as a way of beginning to understand who I am not. And that's this personality. And the Enneagram Institute .com is a wonderful website to go onto to find out more about this. And what they have, and also what they have in their books, is a whole level of health, of mental health. And you begin to see when you move out of the healthy range of your personality, go down to the unhealthy, how every single style of personality, and there are 9 styles in the Enneagram, goes to some form of victimhood.
Right. Yeah,
all kinds of styles, from paranoia to suicidal to, you know, whatever. But we all have that bent. There's just no doubt about it. So it's nice to say, oh, gosh, where am I right now in my personality level of health? And it'll show you ways to move back up, how to use ways. And one of the ways you show is very good, like is, you know, I always have this spiritual state within me that is there.
Right, and that can be projected. You can project reality through that rather than through some of these other filters, and that's really the Enneagram is different filters that you use to process reality. And if you realize, as we all eventually realize doing this work long enough, that we're projecting it anyway, so if we don't like it, we can change it. That's called masterhood, and that's what we're trying to get to.
It really is. I find that as people use these CDs and become more aware of that observer part inside them. So, you know, I'm looking right now out the window, so, but my eyes are looking out there, but what's really observing me looking out there?
Right.
And in the second CD, I begin to introduce the observer, so they begin to practice with that on the inside, and then follow that all the way through down into Delta.
Right.
And so they get practice with it all the time so that they can be what you say, they can be that filter and see that reality quicker and then
change it quicker.
Yeah,
right.
You can change it.
Well, Pat, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. You can reach me. Well, I have a phone number and a website that people can reach. My number is, telephone number is 530-913-0685. And my website is www.healrewireyourbrain.com. And that goes with the book, which is Heal Your Mind, Rewire Your Brain.
Well, we've really enjoyed the interview today. I think listeners can go to your website, get some great information, read your book, and start their own process of rewiring their brain and healing their mind. Next week, we're going to have Randolph Rogers, The Key of Life, A Metaphysical Investigation. On the 10th of April, Joan Newcomb, Tapestry of Time. On the 17th, Richard Smalley, The Dice Game of Shiva. And on the 24th, we'll be talking with Dr. Hildegard Staniger for a toxicology update. On the 15th, the Noetic Science Meeting, they couldn't find anybody to give it, so they asked me to do the Goddess Shift. I'll be talking about the book with 43 authors, spanning all walks of life and what they believe is happening with the goddess energy. And on the 22nd, Dr. Brad Gould is going to give a free lecture on the importance of vitamin D. That's at 7:30 at the Georgetown Square office. Anyway, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Thank you for joining us.